Marketing a new product is really a numbers game. So the more products you can launch, the more successes you'll have, even though you'll likely have a few misses along the way. When you find ways to be fast and flexible with your manufacturing, you can test more products and get to the successes faster. Today's guest brought his manufacturing in-house for the ultimate flexibility and has had many successful product launches since then. It's a really fun interview, so be sure to stick through to the end.
Are you looking for new ways to make your sales grow? You've tried other podcasts, but they don't seem to know. Harvest the growth potential of your product or service as we share stories and strategies that'll make your competitors nervous. Now, here's the host of the Harvest Growth Podcast, John LeClaire.
Welcome back to the show. I'm really excited to be interviewing Anthony Franco today. He's the founder of MC Squares. You can check out his product at MC, the letter M, Mary, Charlie, squares.com. We're going to dive into more of what the product is, and I know you're going to love it, but he's also got a great story or backstory behind this as well that we'll get into in our interview today. Well, first of all, Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
So can you, let's start off. Can you explain what are MC Squares?
Well, high level, it's reusable stationery. So we're the inventor of the reusable sticky note. So we make little flexible reusable sticky notes that stick to anything shiny. You expand that out. We make to-do lists and planners and calendars. And then we also make rigid whiteboards. So everything that works with wet erase and dry erase markers that's handheld, we kind of make a version of that, a high-end version of that. Primarily, we sell on our website, but mostly we sell on Amazon. And trying to get into retail. We've been in consumer packaged goods since 2019. So we've been around for 4 years and we're plugging away. We're the manufacturer. So we make our own stuff. We're a made in the USA company. So that's fun too.
I'd love that. Well, I'd love to dive into that a little bit further in a minute of the make your own stuff kind of thing. It's not very common. Before we do, let's just a little bit more on the product. So what was the first one that you came out? Was it the Post-it note or was it something else that was your very first product you launched?
No, the first product that we made, we still sell. It's a high end, we call it the MC Squares tablet. It's really used for NASA training centers and Air Force training centers and high schools have these in their classrooms. They're a templated dry erase board that have magnets on them. So you think about things individually, you bring it up to the front of the room and stick it on a whiteboard and collaborate on it. That was the first thing that we launched. And that's not a consumer product. So it's more of a B2B sale. And we actually, those are still doing fairly well. I discovered this really interesting material in 2018 that had, it's called microsuction. It sticks with suction. And so I found it and I'm like, oh wait, this could be something really cool. If I put a dry erase surface on it, we have a reusable sticky note. And that's really, it's kind of an interesting angle because most of the time, you know, you're told to start a company by finding customer need and then making a product for it. And actually I found a cool material that could fulfill a customer need. So I kind of did it backwards.
And it is amazing. I've got one. So for our video audience, I stick these right on the edge of my computer. You can't see that part, but, and it sticks really well, super easy, reusable. You can use it a bunch of times and just rinse it off in water to take the ink off.
It's the 2 year sticky note. We warranty them for 2 years.
Wow. That's awesome. Really? I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah.
And I think on the backside, obviously you can collect some dust if I use it on my dirty desk or whatever, and you just rinse off with soap and water the backside if you ever need to refresh it, right?
Yeah, exactly right.
And one of the things I love about it, it comes with, at least the Post-it note version, comes with a wet erase marker. So once it's dried on there for a few seconds, I write my notes, you know, as I'm taking notes during our interview here, and you can put your fingers over them. They don't smudge. It doesn't go away. So, you know, it really is like having a paper Post-it note, but it's reusable and the writing.
Yeah, all of our products, that's our brand of wet erase. It's called the Tacky Marker. And every one of our products comes with a tacky marker. And then we also sell those tacky markers independently.
Very cool. I was going to ask you if you guys developed those yourself or if it's your own product. Very cool. So do you have, from all the products, now you started with one B2B, you've got the Post-it notes we talked about, you've got a long list of other SKUs or products in your website and on Amazon. Do you have a favorite that you use more often than the others personally?
Well, we just launched, I'll try to point it at my desk here. This is going to be upside down, but we just launched this desk mat.
Mm.
So I use this is a big, huge dry erase sticky note, basically, that sticks to our desk. I love this thing. It's a mouse pad desk mat. I use this now every day, but it's brand new. Before that, it's these reusable notepads. So this would sit on my desk, and I don't keep notes, but I take notes. And that just helps me remember what I need to do. And then sometimes I'll have like a little to-do list on it, but it's great. So I just erase it and start over again every day. So it's either those, what we call jotters, which are using notes pads, but I use the desk mat like all day, every day.
That's cool. I'll have to check that one out. And there's obviously a lot of variety on your site as well. Did you, on your product journey, have you had any surprises that really took off? They're like, wow, I didn't realize that one was going to be quite so much a success.
I'm still waiting for that one. Our products are relatable. In other words, they're not so far out there that you don't know what they are, but it's not something that people are looking for. So we're having to do a lot of customer education and product awareness stuff. I wouldn't say that we've had a viral launch of any kind. So we're just slowly growing month over month. So that's no surprise. Yep. Unfortunately, no surprises.
That's not always a bad thing. Sometimes those surprises come and go quickly too. So
right.
It's good to have that steady growth and frankly, to be spread with your revenue across a lot of different variety, a lot of different products. So let's get back into the manufacturing. You mentioned how you do it yourself. I'm trying to think back if I've ever had an interview on this podcast. We've had a few clients that have done their own, but it's usually they own a factory to begin with, and then they get into marketing their own stuff or whatever. So how did you do that? I guess now getting from the point of not only developing this, coming up with the idea, but now your own factory, your own manufacturing.
Well, so it's certainly not how I started. So I started our first product, which is a more of an industrial whiteboard, handheld whiteboard product. I self-taught SolidWorks and designed the product in 3D and sent it off and had the molds and it injection molded in China. And that product that was doing fairly well. And I went to place my second order and the manufacturer said, oh, we lost the molds. You're gonna have to pay us to redo the molds. And at that moment I realized I don't own the business, they do. So I thought, this isn't super complicated. Let me redesign it in something that doesn't need to be molded, but we can cut it out of acrylic sheets and different types of plastics. And so I redesigned the product, bought a CNC router, and started cutting the product and manufacturing the product here locally. And that's really how we got into manufacturing. It was out of necessity. And then I discovered this microsection material and we bought a really nice cutting machine and printing machines and just kind of expanded the factory organically like that based on new products that we wanted to launch. And now our factory is 20,000 square feet. We make our own packaging. We package our own products. We've developed what's known as what I'm calling a fast factory. So we've developed this factory with a lot of technology in the background. So we can do what I call small batch at scale. So I can launch 25 units of a product, test it in the market. And if it doesn't work, I kill it. And if it does work, I scale it. So the factory is a pretty mature factory, even though it's only, you know, 2-3 years old in its current iteration.
You know, as you're talking, I wrote down the note of you know, doing your own manufacturing, bring it, especially coming from China, even if you're working with a local factory that's not your own, you've got a lot more flexibility. That's the word I first wrote down is the ability. But I love how you talked about that flexibility of launching new products to the test markets where, man, the timelines can be really long. It can be very expensive, even if your manufacturer is just down the street from you. But when you own that process yourself, you can cut the time down, cut the cost down, and really take bigger, well, I would say bigger risks, but less expensive risks, right? You can take more chances. Let's say it that way.
Yeah. So 70% of consumer products fail. 70%. So there's two ways of trying to tackle that, right? One is getting really good at product specification and audience selection and understanding consumers and doing a lot of strategic work up front, or launch a whole bunch of products and keep the winners. I tend to think that launching faster and being willing to fail has more chance of success, because all that product research takes you a long time. And by the time you're done with it and start to go through the manufacturing process, the market may have changed. So yeah, I'm a big fan of, obviously I kind of drank the Kool-Aid on the way that we're doing things.
You know, it reminds me, my long-term listeners will maybe remember a story from a long time ago I shared, but from my time with OxiClean and working with the founders of that company. So I used to work in-house with that, and they shared a story one time about our company back then, right? It's been sold off. It was, you know, back before I started Harvest Growth a long time ago, but like a fast moving train, and really launching products is like that. You know, they would describe it as running down the tracks. You've got stuff flying off the side, hinges, doors, all little things are going, but the train's still moving. You're still growing. And it's kind of like that. There's so many ways to take that story. I think the way I take it with you, what you're talking about is you get products that are going to fall off along the way, right? The more you can launch and keep that train going, driving towards really strong growth, the better. And realize you're going to, no matter what, you're going to lose stuff along the way. Even the best, you know, before OxiClean, I was at Kraft Foods, and we would spend typically $2 million on any individual product launch, which made it really risky, which made it so we didn't launch a lot. And
right,
you still had, we had a 90% failure rate. It was crazy. This is years ago, right? Before in online e-commerce, et cetera. And it's just very different in the grocery world. So it's crazy. When they worked, obviously it's, you know, big, big brands, it paid for itself, but you still have stuff falling off the side, even if you're going slow and careful. So man, you might as well have fun on the way and launch as much as you can and find those big successes.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you. I can think of a product right now and have a working product, not a prototype, an actual product tomorrow afternoon. And I can, the limiter of our ability to launch a product isn't the product, it's the photography and the copywriting and publishing it on Amazon. Like the heart, it's usually what's the last thing that you do is the shortest thing that you do is the longest part of it for us, is that that's the publishing and the marketing and the copywriting. But the product itself takes us no time whatsoever. It's just, I think about it, we design it in Illustrator, pump it through the factory, print it, cut it, and ship it. It's that fast.
I love it. And it's obviously fun. Not every listener is going to be able to truly manufacture as quickly as that or do it all in-house, but finding ways to get closer to that, right? Finding ways to be more flexible as to get into test markets faster, right? The next day is amazing. And if our listeners can get there, awesome. But even frankly, if it's a month, right, versus a year, that's fantastic as well. So finding that faster path to test marketing is a great advantage. I love it. So let's talk about marketing. What so far for your business has really worked best to help with your growth?
So we do, I'm trying to figure, this is such a complex topic for us. So to be candid, we have not had much success with traditional, it's kind of funny to say traditional social media marketing, but that's where we're at right now. So, you know, Facebook ads, Google ads, just are not successful for us. And when I say successful, we get a lot of reach, but the cost for those ads compared to the value that a customer brings, we just haven't been able to achieve a good ROI on it yet. So most of our marketing is twofold. One, it's standard PPC advertising on Amazon and authentic influencer marketing. And when I say authentic, all we do is send product to influencers and say, tell us what you think. And we get a lot of organic, authentic influencers just saying, hey, look at this cool product this company sent me. It's unpaid. So we see a lot of great a good halo effect around that initiatives. We send out quite a bit of free product to influencers just to get that organic reach. And it's great because they appreciate the free product. And if we didn't make something good, they wouldn't mention it. So it's good validation on from that perspective. And we do a little bit of paid content creation, but it's not a lot. Most of it is just authentic influencer outreach. And then we just send traffic into Amazon from that.
How do you find these influencers? I know I'm sure they're not everybody you send ends up doing a great video. It's a numbers game, but how do you find ones that may be potential good partners for you?
I have a diabolical marketer. Amanda comes from PopSocket. She used to be their head of influencer and PR marketing. And she's just, influencer marketing takes a very special and unique person that treats it like Amanda would be a killer salesperson if she liked doing sales, because that's really what influencer marketing is. It's doing a ton of outreach, a ton of cold outreach to influencers that she likes and says, hey, would you like to take some product? And it's a constant battle to find these influencers, and it's a process and a funnel and a lot of work. And she's just excellent at it.
And you talked about reaching out to them. Is that done before you send the sample? Do you have that communication happen? Like, hey, can I send you something? Get their approval before actually mailing it in the mail?
Well, yeah, because we don't have their addresses, obviously. So yeah, it's cold outreach. And persistent, relentless.
Yeah, for sure. Well, if you think back, let's talk about learnings in the business. If you could go back and do your first full year in business all over again with all you've learned since then, it hasn't been that long, but you've had a great journey of growth since then. What would you do differently? What'd you learn now that you wish you would have done differently, maybe that first year in business?
Well, my mentality, the way I operate is I launch first and ask questions later. So I move and then figure it out along the way. And that really wasn't the right way to start an Amazon business. Cause when we thought, I thought we came up with this reusable sticky note, like, let's throw it on Amazon, see what happens. And it kind of took off. And I'm not saying like this hockey stick growth, but week over week, month over month, we kept growing. And I actually started our account incorrectly and started those listings incorrectly. So we had this good selling product that was kind of set up incorrectly on Amazon that I wish I would have set it up. Like in hindsight, I wish I knew what I knew then that I know now to set that up. Amazon's a beast to sell on. And so, there's so many things I wish I knew back then that I know now, and it's constantly changing. So for sure, Amazon. I also, in hindsight, I wish I would have taken merchandisability. What's the word? Well, help me with the word. What's the?
I would say merchandising. Make it easy.
Merchandising. Thank you. So yeah, I would have taken the shelf merchandising a lot more seriously for hitting retail shelves, because we're behind on the retail side a bit. We've made a lot of ground up. That's getting into retail and big box retail can be a big challenge, not just from a product perspective, but also how you think about your products selling online is a lot different than what it's going to take to sell it off of a retail shelf.
And I think along those same lines, it's important to realize, I know you know this, how long those timelines can be getting into retail, where you can make a product, invent it today, produce it tomorrow, be on Amazon as soon as you can get pictures done, right? So very quickly, and your website as well. Retail, man, even if it's successful and they love it, it may take 6 months or more from your first initial meeting with them until it's actually on shelf, depending on small versus big, et cetera.
Yeah. So small independent retailers, it could be, they could place an order today and have it on shelf next week.
Yeah.
But big company retailers like Target and Walmart, it's 18 months. And I actually think that's a, that's going to change. I'm making a bet that that's going to change, that big box retailers are going to value companies like ours that can produce in smaller batch tests and do some shorter run tests in stores and then roll it and then treat their in-store advantage with some of the e-commerce flexibility that exists. I hope that that's going to come to play because we built our factory around it.
Yeah, I hope so. I think you may be right. Hopefully we're swinging back towards supporting real innovators rather than, you know, the kind of the riskless but growthless opportunities just to add in another SKU for an existing brand on shelf that might sell 1% more than it previously did. You know, these companies, especially Walmart back in the days, I think back to my OxiClean days, they were really innovative and they've gotten so big, it gets harder, but it's just a conscious decision to be able to launch things in fewer stores, do these little test marks and markets and find great, successful entrepreneurs like yourself that can help drive their growth and start small with them. They don't need to get it into 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 stores at the same time. And yeah, so I agree with you. I hope they're swinging the pendulum back the other direction to really get more innovative.
It's funny, the in my aisle at Target, right? The aisle that we belong in. It's funny because the innovation from sticky notes is like, hey, we've launched a 4-pack in 4 colors versus the 3-pack, right? It's like that's the innovation in the space. And so yeah, it's a little frustrating to get these buyers to recognize that there can be innovation outside of different pack sizes and a slightly different, you know, foil stamp on the packaging versus the fact that the product is a unique way of thinking about stationery in general. And I think that same mentality carries through all the aisles within a Target or a Walmart too. There's just a hesitancy to innovate, probably because, frankly, doing business with them is very difficult and it's expensive. You have to be a big company to be able to do business with Target or Walmart because it's expensive to do business with them.
Agreed. Yeah, very true. Well, Anthony, are there any resources that you'd recommend, things that have been helpful for you in your business?
Yeah. So for me, the most help has been very localized. So, I've been purposeful about being engaged with the local startup community, and in Colorado, the local startup community is phenomenal. So I've been very lucky to have a lot of other entrepreneurs to bounce ideas off of, and to also help it and you know help with my own experience. And there's something for me about just engaging with other entrepreneurs. It's a lonely gig. And finding other people with the same disease I have has been uplifting, to say the least. So I would, you know, if anybody that's listening isn't involved in their local community and has entrepreneur friends, go find them. I find giving is a lot more rewarding than getting back in that, especially in that environment. Also, it's kind of a no BS zone, right? So from my side, typically from, you know, friends and family and employees, people tend to tell you what they think you want to hear, where a fellow entrepreneur is going to tell you that's a terrible idea. and I don't get enough of that. So I would encourage people to go and find local communities where they can go have a breakfast or a coffee or just have a Zoom call and connect with people that have the same, maybe not having the same issues that you're having as a business, but the same issues you're having as a leader.
Yeah, that's great advice. And you know, they don't have to be even product businesses. I know, you know, you might be with in a group with people from completely different industries, but it is amazing how often the big high level issues are very similar, and learnings that they've had getting through solving problems can really apply to our businesses as well. So we can help and we can receive help from owners of other businesses.
The stage of company matters, but what you're selling that typically doesn't make as big a difference.
Yeah, great point. Great point.
Yeah.
Well, Anthony, is there anything I didn't ask that you think could be helpful for our audience?
Yeah. I'd just like to underscore the fact that, you know, for the founders that are listening, that are feeling lost and lonely, like, that's normal. I often get asked, you know, I'm thinking about becoming a founder. I'm thinking about starting my own company. What's your advice? And the first thing I say every time is, don't do it. And they look at me like, what are you talking about? You're doing it. How could you tell other people not to do it? And I find that, the ones that listen to me, they were right not to listen to me. And the ones that think I'm an idiot, they're right. I am an idiot. Right. So it's like, it's kind of a self-selecting answer. It's hard. It's not for everybody. It's not glamorous. You need to have no shame and no ego when you do this. And that feeling of loneliness is normal. That feeling of, I always put it like, you know, that moment where you're just about to fall asleep in bed and you jump up, you jerk up and you like jump. Have you ever had that? That's what it feels like all the time. And that's okay. That's normal. that panic feeling. And if you're not feeling panic, then you're missing something. So embrace that feeling, embrace the loneliness, get used to it. And if you can, persevere through it.
Great advice. I think everyone should really take that to heart at any stage of business, frankly. And I, you know, in all the conversations I've had, that those feelings, they exist when you're making $100 of revenue, right? When you're just starting out, and they exist when you're making $100 million, when you're still in that entrepreneurial stage. They're different, right? But it is lonely, or can be lonely. It's amazing when you have the passion for it. Obviously you love it. I love it. But with anything we love, there's hardship along the way, and you've got to have that passion that's going to keep you going. So I love that answer you give to people, because like you said, if they're going to be turned away from that response and decide not to go on their own, then they shouldn't do it, because it's right. Going to be hard. But if they've got the passion to ignore you, they need that, because they're going to have to ignore a lot along the way. You're going to get no's at every step of the journey, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Anthony, I really appreciate the time. This has been a really fun interview. I know our audience is going to love this as well. Thanks again for joining the show today.
Thanks again, John.
Be sure to check out Anthony's product at mcsquares.com. As always, you can find it in the show notes. And also be sure to check out harvestgrowth.com to see other episodes we've recorded. And if you'd like to take a shortcut and learn the process that we've used to profitably launch and grow hundreds of products since 2007, download our secret sauce product marketing campaign cheat sheet at harvestgrowthsecretsauce.com. Or you can set up an appointment right from our website to speak directly with a member of the Harvest Growth team in a free one-on-one consultation.